And a warm welcome back to the Earshot podcast. Kirsty Melville here with you. Now, it wasn't so long ago that the thousands of carers who look after sick and disabled family went largely unrecognised. There's still quite a way to go, but today there's a much greater awareness of the plight of unpaid, exhausted and often isolated carers. But their sex life, their romantic life, the intimacy they so often give up, this remains an unspoken taboo. And so today, Rachel Carbonell brings you the story of Elaine, a woman who found herself caring for her husband at a relatively young age, but who refused to give up on affairs of the heart.
It's a warm, sunny Easter Saturday when Elaine opens the door of her Albury home to me, on the Murray River on the New South Wales-Victorian border.
Hello.
Hi there.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Elaine is 65 years old. She's petite with dark bobbed hair, and when she's amused, which is often, her eyes have a cheeky crinkle to them.
Oh, and here's Darriet. Come home. Do you need a shower or you're all right?
I'm going to have a sit down.
You're going to have a sit down, all right. Will you have a sit down? Rachel's just explaining.
Elaine's life as Damien's carer began slowly, almost 20 years ago, when they found out that he had Parkinson's disease.
When he was diagnosed at the age of 47, for me, as a nurse, the one illness that I just thought was the most hideous thing was Parkinson's disease. We didn't really even say anything there was to each other because we both knew what it was going to be like.
In the years that followed, Elaine suspected something else was wrong. They both knew the Parkinson's would get progressively worse. They didn't anticipate that he'd also get dementia.
When we first got the diagnosis of a frontal lobe dementia after we'd had some neuropsych testing done, I said to him, this is your worst nightmare. And he just shrugged his shoulders and I just knew that that wasn't the Damien that I knew.
Damien was once a successful radiologist whose daily trade was in X-ray films, but he showed no interest in looking at the films of his own brain.
Yeah, and I met Damien in Albury.
Elaine was a young nurse when she met Damien at the Albury Hospital where they both worked.
I was a resident.
He was a first-year resident.
And
so it was his first year out after finishing his medicine at Monash. And we didn't start going out, did we, really, towards the end of the year. He presented himself one day in his white coat and he just said, I'll pick you up at 12 for the Albury races. No, would you like to go? Just like, yeah, we're going.
At the time, Elaine was a single mother with a young son. The pair married, had two more boys, and moved to Gippsland, where Damien founded a thriving radiology practice.
We moved down there in what, 1984? April, excuse me. And we were there for 23 years. But they were great years down there.
Damien continued to work for quite a few years after his initial diagnosis, but his success was cut short by his illness.
When he did leave, he just left. He didn't say goodbye. He just finished his shift one day and left. You know, after all that work, you know, and dedication to his staff, he just walked out the door. He couldn't bear it.
Damien and Elaine decided on a sea change. They moved to Melbourne's Mornington Peninsula. It was there that the dementia really began to set in. Damien lost interest in his old passions, like fixing up cars, and the pair became cut off from the world, and in some ways, from each other.
I can look back now and see, you know, there were massive changes in behaviour. He could go and he could work on those cars, but he didn't. He lost all interest almost in, he would just sit for hours and hours watching movies. It was very isolating for him, really.
And for you too, presumably.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I went through periods where I was drinking far too much. I was out watching other people walking on the beach or, you know, having a coffee. Often Damien and I'd have an appointment or something and I'd say, well, come on, we'll go for a coffee. but he never wanted to. He just wanted to go home again. I mean, you just couldn't socialise, really, and so you stop going out because it's too hard.
Elaine wants to stay as Damien's carer for as long as she can.
If something happens to me, Damien will have to go into care. There is no way that he could manage on his own. One of the hardest things I've ever done is when I was first looking at respite for Damien. I just couldn't believe I was standing, you know, in a nursing home, even talking about putting him into something like that. Yeah, but people don't. They don't understand unless they're here. Even our kids, I don't think, really. I mean, they do to some degree, but I mean, you know, being mum, you put on your brave face and just try and make it as easy for everybody as you can.
Becoming her husband's carer hasn't tested her commitment to him, but it has tested her marriage vows.
I honestly believe that when we make a commitment like that, that we've really got no idea what we're doing. And I also have come to the conclusion that for myself, and it's probably my wicked way of looking at things, but I think, well, I've done the, you know, for richer, for poorer, I've done the health, I'm still doing the sickness, and I've renegotiated on the forsaking all others.
Elaine's mother and her eldest son live near Albury. She'd regularly make the long journey from the peninsula to visit both of them. On one of those visits, she reconnected with an old friend from high school.
Out of sheer curiosity, I said, oh, well, next time I'm up at the farm, I'll see if I can't give him a ring. And he was also a good friend of my brother's who died in 72. And I rang up and we talked for about an hour. He was very surprised to hear this blast in the past. And, well, I said, the next time I'm up, come out to lunch. And so he came out to lunch and it was just amazing. It was just, he walked through the gate and it was just like I'd seen him a week ago. Yeah, and so this friendship ensued.
And that friendship blossomed into a relationship.
Yeah, it blossomed into a romance. I mean, most unexpected. But one of the lovely things was at that time I was packing up my mother's house and he came with me to help me.
Trevor's a single father with an adult son and a teenage daughter.
I think it took a while. Yeah, I was living here. I had my single life. I would say done with relationships. Yeah, I suppose she pulled me out of a retirement relationship sort of thing, you know. We've had some funny occasions here. One day when I was changing the single bed to a double bed, you know, going from the monastic life to a possible change in there. When everyone was here, my mother was here, the ex-wife was here, and I think Elaine was here putting in a new mattress. It was quite funny.
Elaine and Damien recently moved back to Albury to be closer to family, and they now also live around the corner from Trevor. Trevor and Damien have since become friends. Trevor's a carpenter and has a workshop at his house where the two often spend time together. It's Damien who takes me to meet Trevor the next day.
Good morning. How are you?
You right to go up to Trev's?
Damien has a mobility scooter to get around on, and he's developed a little bit of a reputation on it.
Now, you're not going to go too fast for me, are you, Damien? I'm living in terror of
you
keeping
show
up
with Rachel you. How you took out the doors in the garage, Damien.
Thank you. We'll see you shortly.
It only takes about 5 minutes to get to Trevor's house.
I can smell the wood already.
Today, the two men plan to put a roof cover over Trevor's backyard pizza oven.
We're going to try and get this up. So I've just got two screws to put in.
They give me a bit of a tour of the workshop first.
This is the job that's on at the moment. So Damien does a lot of sanding, don't you? And this is the day bed we started making for Elaine, but ran out of time before her birthday. So we went and bought the other one. And that's beautiful, Jared, but I've worked out how to make it. I want to be able to dismantle it.
Right, yeah.
I won't be able to do that, so you can take it apart.
When the subject of Trevor's poor hearing comes up, I realise that in many ways, Damien's mind is still sharp, despite his dementia.
Have you got good hearing, or have you got hearing loss from working? Yeah.
Well, tinnitus pretty bad.
Tinnitus.
Thanks, doctor. Yeah.
Sit this bit of Damien, sit this edge on here. Just sit it on there, man. That's it. Do you want to come behind?
Damien and Trevor's friendship is the product of hours of making things together, making mistakes and making jokes.
I was putting his scooter into the back of the ute and I ran forward instead of going backwards and I was ploughing it into the back of my car and he's laughing his head off. And his main comment was, well, now I can tell people that I'm not the only idiot who can't ride that. So he was really happy that I'd make the same mistakes as he does.
He can really crack along on that thing.
I know, yeah. He goes probably too fast. Yeah, I worry a little bit about that, him on the road. And there's too many other silly people on the roads.
There's been a couple of stacks in the workshop too.
When the brain doesn't connect to the feet to move, if he does stumble and fall, he's usually landing against a piece of furniture or something where he can regain his balance. But he's had some good falls here. I've picked him up quite a few times. But that's always, you know, we laugh. But as long as he's not hurting himself, yeah. But we make sure that it can't be too serious. I'm always right next to him, yeah. Disability doesn't mean you've got to sit in your room and be left alone. But, you know, if he wants to come up here, he comes up here. If he doesn't, he doesn't. It's simple.
Their friendship also gives Elaine some respite.
I never even think of it like that. I see that it does give her a break, and I'm happy to be able to do that. If he's not in the house there. Yeah, no, but she needs her time too.
How did you become mates with Damien?
I think it's a bit of a male, you know, friendship thing, sort of. That I make him laugh, I know that. We don't talk sort of big life things either. I mean, I could easily. You know, I could talk to him about how he feels about dying or the illness or where's it leading him to or, you know, my friendship with Elaine. And we could ask all those questions. But at this point in time, I've never asked him any of those. He doesn't ask me. He's never asked me anything. Maybe one day.
And why haven't you asked those questions?
It's just a time thing, you know. If he showed aspects of fear or uncertainty about his future, I would then probably talk to him about it. But he's never done that. His demeanour in the day is sort of jovial nearly, in fact, childlike. That is the regression, there's no doubt about that. He can laugh at the most sort of serious things, you know.
Damien's dementia is frontal lobe dementia. It affects his executive function. So things like empathy and judgment, social ability, initiating conversations and asking others about themselves. Elaine's been surrounded by dementia in her lifetime. Her father had it before he died, and now her mother has it too. Today she's taking me to Tulangata to visit her mum.
Bye.
On the drive, Elaine explains that she still loves Damien, but it's not a romantic love anymore.
Yeah, the change is just has been massive. Even though he's still Damien and he's still got fabulous wit, and with frontal lobe dementia, what I see in Damien is this childlike enthusiasm, which is very endearing. After a while, those feelings, they just change and you become the carer. And really there's nothing that happens in our house that's not initiated or instigated by me. We've had a good, solid marriage. Damien has been absolutely amazing.
All right, so here we are. How often do you come out and visit your mum?
Twice a week.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I could go every day and she wouldn't really know whether I'd been here yesterday or...
Yeah.
She doesn't seem to have any real sense of time. We've just got to sign in.
Mm. And everybody's sitting outside and getting a bit of sunshine out there, by the looks.
Hello.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, well, it's only your daughter.
You've got the wrong glasses.
This is Rachel.
Hello, nice to
Hello,
meet you.
Hello, Rachel. Oh. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thank you.
We peel Marg away from the other residents and head up to her room.
Here I go.
I can't wobble my bum.
You show and Rachel your work.
Now, would you explain why all this is going on?
So I'm doing a story on Elaine and the carers group that she's involved in, some of the work that she
does. But she's no carer. She wouldn't know food from a bull's foot.
I think she does quite a good job of caring for Damien these days.
Yeah, because he doesn't answer back. That's why I answer back.
This is going to be so enlightening.
What's going on?
Well, I was going to give you an iced coffee, but I'm not. I'm not.
Going to now.
This is my room around here.
We spend some time looking at an old family scrapbook.
That's Sue who just rang on the phone.
Oh, there's a lot of memories.
Lots of memories, isn't there? And us, Damien and I, when we were overseas.
Before she met Trevor again, one of Elaine's lifelines was a support group she helped to establish for carers of people with frontal lobe dementia. It's a group she remains deeply involved with.
I'm off to Melbourne Thursday because I've got a carers group meeting on Friday morning. But Damien will be out the farm and it'll be me bringing Damien out on Wednesday. So when I drop him out, I'll come and see you then, Sunday today.
It's no good to remember asking me what day it is.
Well, it's Easter Sunday.
It's Easter Sunday, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
On the way home, we drop in at the family farm, where Elaine's eldest son, Scott, lives.
Hello, puppy.
I did bring you boys an Easter egg.
Oh,
her youngest son, Adrian, is also visiting.
Rachel just had a most entertaining
Elaine's a bit of a mother to everyone. Not in a fussing over you kind of way, but in a casual, friendly, just keeping an eye on you without you really noticing kind of way. Today, she's quietly making sure that Scott's okay to look after Damien in a few days' time.
So are you going to be working on farm or you'd be...
I'd say we'd be probably back, yeah.
Yeah, just so you, we'll definitely be here. You can organise your days that for this work, you know, when Dad's here that you're around.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
When Elaine resolved to move back to Albury, she decided it was time to tell her sons and Damien about her relationship with Trevor.
So how did your sons react when you told them that you had a new relationship?
Oh, I think they were probably pretty shocked, really. And I can understand that. I mean, your mum's your mum. She's just mum. And you don't ever think about your parents, especially 60-plus, as a romantic figure in anybody's life, God forbid. Yeah, so, and I think being boys too. Yeah, so, look, it wasn't without its difficulties, but the main issue was, I think, that in particular one son felt that if we all knew, you know, it was up to me what I did, but if we all knew, it wasn't fair that Damien didn't know. I sort of tried to explain that my advice was that there was no point because Damien's life hadn't changed. I was still doing all the things that I'd always done for him. But when it got to the point where I knew this was a very serious relationship, I've actually got no idea how I thought this would work. You know,
how anxious were you about it at the time?
I don't know that I was anxious. I think I was just sad. I was sad. You know, it was a massive, massive thing to say to somebody that you love. That you love somebody else as well. I mean, that's just... And actually, we both had tears rolling down our face. And then he looked at me and he shook his head and he said, "Don't you feel bad?" And he just wandered off and watched the telly. I mean, it was a very hard, hard thing to do and not something that I've done lightly. But I have to live my life. It wasn't guilt, it was that I was hurting him. You know, that I knew that he loved me as best as he could. But, you know, that quite by accident I'd found something else, you know, something totally different. I mean, Trev's a very different person to Damien. But I mean, you know, that's the other amazing thing. They've become such wonderful friends.
Elaine's youngest son, Adrian, was 14 years old when Damien was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Dad was always the strong, silent type, and a lot of the boys in the family are as well. And yeah, we sort of had a period of, I think it was around the time that I was finishing high school, where we were sort of going out for lavish dinners and drinking far too much. It was a fun time, in a sense. But, you know, I think it was probably symptomatic of all of us kind of dealing with the emotional aspect of seeing Dad, who'd always been this kind of intellectual juggernaut, potentially, you know, he was going to be fading at some point. To have an intellect like that taken from you, I guess, yeah, to be somebody who's so articulate and brilliant and to have that ability taken away.
Was there any disconnect there between what you think your mum may be noticing and going through and then like a lag in terms of you guys clocking that stuff?
Yeah, Mum always sort of made us very aware of it from the get-go. I suppose it was just there were some difficulties. I think at times I felt that she was perhaps reducing every aspect of Dad's behaviour to certain symptoms, so that it felt like there was almost no element of his actual personality left, that he'd been reduced to this list of symptoms. You know, I have to feel that there's some of him still there, and I believe there is, you know, there's still Dad.
What have you observed about how your mum has coped with all of this?
I think Mum felt very alone for a long time, and, you know, there was, she's remained staunch and just, she sort of kept battling on through everything. And, you know, there's certainly been times when communication's kind of broken down between us a bit. You know, things could become quite heated in terms of how certain things were being, you know, dealt with or not dealt with. And
when you say certain things, what are you talking about?
Well, one was sort of just how the beginnings of, you know, her relationship with Trev was initially dealt with. Anyway, that was an issue.
And you've managed to work through that, though.
Yeah, you're a family, you're going to keep moving forward. I think you always want people, and particularly family, to understand your position. But, you know, you agree to disagree and move forward amicably. Mm. Because, you know, shit, you got to hang out at Christmas, so.
So we're back at Trev's now for lunch. They're firing up the pizza oven. Yeah, to give it a go.
Yep. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
There's also a wood barbecue going, and Damien explains that it's another piece of Trevor's handiwork.
Oh, yeah. So it's an old wood-fired stove grate, is that what it is?
Looking out on the scene as we bring the dishes inside, Elaine reflects on her good fortune, despite all of the bad fortune.
See, when you look at Damien, he's there, part of it all. He's, you know, he's engaged, he's not shut out of any, you know, anything. I just think Damien's got more with this, and he hasn't lost me. You know, I'm still here.
When I first arrived, I assumed Damien wouldn't be in a position to give me his opinion of all of this. After spending time with him, I realise I'm wrong. And not asking him about it feels like it would be insulting or patronising. But it's not as easy as just bringing it up either. Elaine and Trevor have been at pains to tell me that they're discreet about their relationship around Damien. It's all in the open. Elaine often stays at Trevor's house and is back in the morning to see that all is well with Damien. Trevor will often be the one checking on Damien if Elaine goes away. But it's not something they're all talking about. So much is unsaid. I don't want to be the person who breezes in and opens up a subject that everyone has been artfully avoiding for the sake of peace and dignity. But I figure I can't leave without talking to Damien. I realise you're one of the people I haven't asked how you feel about things, but I just wonder if you have anything to say about how you feel about where your life is at now in terms of your health and your home and the setup that you guys are in.
Well, my health is still... deteriorating.
I'm aware that all of us have a tendency to finish Damien's sentences, and I know that's frustrating for him. He can be hard to understand, even more so if you're not close to him and picking up on all of the non-verbal communication. What he tells me is that his health and his mobility are steadily declining. That back on the Mornington Peninsula, he and Elaine were both isolated, and their lives have been much better since they moved back to Albury. As for Trevor, he says the friendship and the woodwork have given him something he felt he didn't have before.
I think relationship we have developed is beneficial for to me and Elaine.
And that the connection with Trevor is beneficial to all of them. Elaine's dedication to Damien is one of the things that Trevor admires about her. And he says he too feels committed to Damien.
It was Damien's work and Damien's life that has, I guess, the basis of her lifestyle now, you know, the comfort that they live in and the whatever they've got is because of Damien's hard work, and he worked amazingly hard. There's no doubt about that. And she would never, ever leave Damien. As long as she can care for him, he won't be in any other care place. I've told her I want to be there when he dies. I'll be on one side, she'll be on the other. So that's all right. I haven't told him that, but I could tell him that any day.
What a gorgeous story. The Three of Us was produced by Rachel Carbonell with sound engineer Angie Grant. And I do hope you can join us for the next episode of Earshot when our regular contributor, Masako Fukui, tells the story of her kamikaze pilot father. It's a truly moving exploration of the Japanese suicide pilots of the Second World War and our fascination with them. I'm Kirsty Melville, and I'll catch you then.